Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Good morning. We're here in sunny Atlanta, and this summer, I can't say that we've been able to say that a lot, so it's nice to see the sky and the sun this morning. But here we are at Growth Matters, and Growth Matters is a show that allows us to dialogue and learn about ideas and strategies to really help create spark people's creativity and increase people's ability to grow their company in what we all know is today a very competitive environment. And I'm really excited today to have three colleagues who have quite an extensive background in a number of different industries and companies that are going to share their insights and their thoughts around growth and being successful in business. So we have Mike Grindel from 22 Squared. He's the Executive Vice President and Chief Administration Officer. And in all cases, I'm going to let everybody sort of introduce themselves, tell you a little bit about their background and their company. We have Meredith Rentz, who is the CEO of a nonprofit here in Atlanta, MedShare. And we have Tanya Lewis, who is Vice President of Sales Governance at Equifax. And so we're just going to get right into it, talking about growth after you learn a little bit about our guests. So why don't we start with you, Mark? Just share a little bit about yourself.
Great. It's great to be here, and thanks for having us all here this morning. So my career has been with three big companies. I was with Federated Department Stores, Citicorp, and then Coca-Cola. And then 6.5 years ago, we really wanted to make a change and be part of a mid-sized company, a private company, came to 22 Squared, and I handle everything there from IT to finance to analytics, board reporting, board management, and part of the executive team, and having a blast there in our Midtown office.
Great. Meredith?
Great. Let me echo Mike's comments and say thank you for having us today. My career, probably the common theme or trend has been the intersection of public health and business practice. And so I've had the opportunity to work at Deloitte Consulting, doing healthcare strategy work at Emory Healthcare, and then joined the MedShare team about 2 years ago when our co-founder, CEO A.B. Short, decided to retire, in part because we were headed on this growth trajectory, and he decided that he wanted a little break from that. So MedShare, as you said, is a 501c3 nonprofit. We're headquartered here in Atlanta, but we have operations on the western region in California, and also are about to start up in the Northeast in New York. And we collect surplus medical supplies and equipment from hospitals and manufacturers, and then we match those up with hospitals and clinics in developing countries to provide them, the doctors and nurses, the tools that they need to take care of their patients.
Great. And last but certainly not least, we have Tanya Lewis with us this morning.
Thank you, Michelle. And I, too, am very pleased to be with you this morning. A little bit about Tanya is that she's probably the oldest person in the room. I'm a 30-year veteran in areas of global sales and marketing. And interestingly enough, I've worked in three dynamically different organizations, all major corporations, but at the core and fabric of how they operate their business is grounded in the elements of growth. I've seen similarities with those organizations and a few differences. Specifically with Equifax, we are an organization that has, if you will, a resilient history and a history that is grounded in providing services and information solutions to others. That dynamic is about managing big data and matching that big data with analytics and technology to provide insights to our different classes and channels of customers. So I'm pleased to be here with you today and talk to you a little bit about how we do that and reinforce it in a way that our clients and customers are confident that the information that we are providing is one they can rely on and use to make better decisions in their business.
Great. So as I was just sort of thinking about, this whole idea of growth and, you know, there's old business adage that if you're not growing in business, you're shrinking. You know, it's not even you're staying the same. You're shrinking because your competitors are out there. Talk to me a little bit about how innovation plays a role in growth in what's happening today at your company, Mike.
So 22 Squared has been around in one form or another for 90 years, which in advertising is actually pretty unusual. And yet we often feel like a startup. We have a lot of young people that work for us. We have a lot of new ideas, and we have a lot of new offerings in the market. So we have a wide range of clients, Publix, Toyota, Baskin-Robbins, Buffalo Wild Wings, Florida's Natural. And so our clients are touching consumers, and to echo Tanya's comment, you know, a big area is data, and a big area is analytics. So we've invested over the past 2 or 3 years. Thankfully, our results have allowed us to continue to invest in people and technology and new ideas around social media, what we call performance solutions, which is analytics and insights and storytelling, and in digital marketing, which is required in today's advertising space. So we've made specific investments in those areas as our clients' demands in those areas have grown. And we are working hard to stay ahead of the market, and it's an advantage for us. We're a private company, so we can make these choices to invest in our growth. So we've built out these practices, and we're expanding business with our current clients, and then we're winning new business off these investments as well.
Great. Tanya, you know, when I was doing a little bit of research and looking at Equifax, you know, right there on your website, you talk about having a heritage of innovation. So, you know, how is that playing out with Equifax as it is achieving to grow?
I think as we think about growth within the Equifax enterprise, it really is about ensuring that you are ahead, if you will, of your competition relative to your product offering. If you are ahead, then you can clearly and sustainably differentiate yourselves. So for, I would probably say, the last decade, we have been very deliberate about investing in what we call differentiated data assets, meaning we have a broad portfolio of products that serve either our B2C clients or our B2B clients. And to do that, we have to maintain diversity, and we have to innovate faster and quicker than our competition. That innovation spills over into our technological platform as well as our decisioning models. So at the fabric and a part of our strategic imperatives, each annual planning cycle, we are looking at new products that fulfill against our clients' current needs and perhaps anticipate what their needs will be in the future.
Yeah, I want to come back a little bit, because I'm hearing some themes around data and technology, so I want to come back to that subject. But before I do, Meredith, you know, you're in the nonprofit sector. A lot of times when you think about growth and innovation, people don't think that that's something that necessarily nonprofit executives are really focused on. But I know you are. So talk to us a little bit about how that plays out in the nonprofit sector with MedShare.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing because the premise of growth in a for-profit sector around capturing market share and driving profit is not something that's at the core of our motivation in our sector. The interesting thing is from an innovation perspective, MedShare was founded 15 years ago specifically in a grounding of innovation to do something different in our sector. Previously, in collecting medical surplus, there was very much what we call a push model. So the supplies were collected and then sent to recipients in Africa or Central America, South America, the Caribbean, just based on what we had. And there was a real understanding that that was not a sustainable or an appropriate practice because, in a sense, we were pushing our excess onto folks with this paternalistic assumption that what we had was certainly better than nothing. And so the founding of MedShare was based on this innovation of how can we actually change the model so that the recipients and our customers are pulling what they need versus pushing. And that was, again, grounded in technology. So how can we create an online database of the supplies that we have so that our recipients in country can pull those? Now, the interesting thing for us in terms of innovation is that while that sort of system makes sense in a U.S. context, many times in rural Kenya or in the remote mountains of Ecuador, they don't have the bandwidth to be able to get online and access that information. So it makes us stop and think about innovation in a different way. So what does that look like in order to still be able to fulfill our mission, but do it in a technologically appropriate way? When it comes to growth, again, the focus is based on this urgency of knowing that for us, any supply or piece of equipment that we're not in the position to collect and appropriately repurpose is going into the landfill. So the urgency around growth for us is how do we responsibly extend our ability to capture that surplus so that we can better fulfill our mission. It's a lot of the same principles as Mike and Tanya and others face, but it's just with a slightly different twist and it has a slightly different motivation. We're really focused on how do we implement and achieve our mission in the most responsible and effective way. And for MedShare, because of the model that we've built out, growing and getting to scale is part of how we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, and so each of you have talked about the technology and data. And that, I mean, isn't that how it is for all of us in all of our worlds? We are just so much more focused on getting data, interacting with technology. But I always find it a challenge. I mean, I started at IBM, so I started my career in technology. But today, just how do you keep up with it and not have technology just for technology's sake, but to actually use it to deliver product and service in an innovative way, but not let the technology lead the business decisions?
I think one of the things that makes that possible within Equifax is because we are dealing with information solutions that deal with credit and wealth and assets. Our identity and debt management products allow for analytics and decisioning in spaces that are really about information. How you analyze that information and put it in the context of what a client may need is really what's critical. However, I would be remiss to say that the broader economy is not the best indicator or the best insight we could have relative to what types of innovative needs may be required. I dare say that all of us sitting in this room have lived through probably our country's deepest economic recession. The American economy, though, in the last decade has proved to be very, very volatile and elusive. And what we recognize is for us to be able to grow, we have got to innovate faster, quicker than others. And that frequently will mean investments in new assets, investment in capabilities, analytical capabilities that may or may not be there. It means an incremental investment in people or human capital. We may have to even acquire capabilities that we don't currently own. We examine, are we in the right markets or are there other markets that we should be diligent about planning and executing in? And so I would tell you the economy as a broad, if you will, indicator of how we innovate is critical in our business.
Yeah. So kind of thinking about that, in order to fulfill the needs of, you know, your various constituency, being staying on top of trends and what's happening out there in the marketplace is really important. So, Mike, whenever I sort of think about the advertising world, I'm a Mad Men fan. And so, you know, that sort of raised my attention to advertising in and of itself. So talk to me a little bit about how your 22 Squared keeps up with those trends and integrates that into the work you do with clients.
Yeah, the advertising world has certainly changed a lot since the Mad Men days. And I can assure you there's no cigars and whiskey and all. There might be a Friday happy hour and a ping pong table and those other elements. But, you know, you start with our clients and the consumers that they're selling to. So you think about grocery consumers or car consumers or sports bar attendees and And how are they, how are our clients interacting with them, and how are they trying to market to them? And then, you know, the explosion of information. So let's just take social media. And Facebook, of course, has become a huge place for advertisers, for brands to interact with consumers. And they're interacting with consumers in all kinds of ways, sending messages, consumers talking to consumers. And so from a data and technology standpoint, you try to track all that information, and there's an exploding area called sentiment analysis. So this is, you know, if someone says, I really, I can't use a four-letter word here, but, you know, that thing is really the bomb, meaning it in a good way, or that thing is really the bomb like it sucks. And how do you measure that and report that back to a client? So that's a very specific area where, you know, the advertising and marketing space is changing right in front of us. You look at the way today's 20-year-old consumes information. They're still watching a lot of TV, but they almost always have another screen or two other screens going at the same time. For sure, their smartphone is in their lap or in their hand. And if they're at home, they might also have an iPad, and all of that is happening at the same time. And what the marketers want to know is, what is the right spend? How much should I be doing on TV, radio, pushing into smartphones, pushing into tablet, and then how much should we be communicating on Twitter and Facebook and tracking that information? How does it all intersect? And then finally, how does that turn into a sale? So an attribution analysis. So it's a really fascinating area, and we're working very hard to stay in front of that. We have very smart people. You're starting to see statisticians join the advertising space with wicked degrees from all kinds of places you wouldn't think you'd be hiring advertising talent. And the talent is young and smart and helping us stay out in front of things. So hope that gives you a few examples of where we're trying to stay ahead of the trends.
Yeah. Meredith, at MedShare, I know one of the things that's core to your mission is around sustainability. And that's something that, you know, is, I think, even more and more and more getting people focused on that. So how do you, you know, stay abreast of trends in that area or in any other?
Yeah, so I think just building on what Mike said, you know, as an individual leader in an organization, there's so many channels and ways to consume information in terms of understanding trends. And there can be a tendency just to kind of shut down because it's too much. But I think it is important to figure out who are those people that you're going to talk to, what are those channels that you're going to plug into to try to stay up to date on what are those trends that are impacting your sector now and maybe in the future. It's been really interesting with the environmental aspect of what MedShare does, because while there's a huge humanitarian aid and global health aspect to it, very fundamentally, we're keeping supplies and equipment out of the landfill here in the U.S. But what we've seen is that while when we started up in California, the hospitals, the individuals in that market got that aspect of what we did immediately, and in fact, it was a driving force. Here in Atlanta and in the Southeast, we've seen a much more gradual adoption. And I would say even just in the last 12 months, the hospitals and clinics are really seeing that as a very authentic way and reason for why they're participating with us and contributing their surplus. And so the important lesson there for us at MedShare is that we didn't walk away from the sustainability part of it, but we just had to be sensitive to different markets and recognize that some are at different places in the onboarding curve, if you will. And now the next aspect of the sustainability is really in the countries that we're partnering with, being thoughtful around if we're sending disposable drapes, for example, to a country where really the trend and the market need is to have cloth drapes that are used and laundered so that you're not creating additional waste. How do we address that? So I think it's just continuing to push yourself and be in dialogue with those that can give you the best information about what your customer, what your partner needs.
You know, Mike mentioned, and I echo his thoughts relative to the most phenomenal platforms, if you will, for insights or where to glean trends. And I dare say that that is via the internet, as we all struggle with how do we optimize utilization of that platform to grow our business. And right behind that, of course, is mobiles. Any of those enablers that allow us to get ideas, be they for small or large projects, comes from likely an internet source where you have millions of people that are connected almost real time, and taking what we can learn from them and making it meaningful insight to drive our business. I think if we could collectively figure out how to optimize the internet and mobility within our respective areas, then growth becomes something that is more predictable for us.
Mm. Mike?
You know, Meredith, I was listening to you. I had made the connection that your business had a sustainability piece, but hadn't fully made that connection just until you were talking. So, and I know we're going to talk about our own development and kind of how. So, has this been something you've had to kind of build your brain around, and like you're in new dialogue about new things?
No, yeah, thanks for asking that. It's been interesting from a professional development perspective because I came to the organization, as I said, very much from a public health, global health perspective. And the environmental aspect of what we do, it's very authentic. It's a very tangible piece of keeping, millions of tons of waste out of the landfill. And yes, that's been a growth area for me. And to learn how to be in dialogue. And for example, when I was just out in California, having the opportunity to speak with hospital executives who view that as just part of their organizational dialogue, how many pounds are they diverting from the landfill? How do they weave that into their business planning? And being able to listen to them, then I can come back and talk to an Emory Healthcare or a Piedmont and kind of share that perspective as they're coming on to that awareness as well. So, yeah, it's been an exciting opportunity for me to kind of learn as I'm figuring this out.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great segue to think about growth, but then sort of the personal piece of it, because you all are all consummate leaders and have been at different firms and growing your career. You know, I am always interested in to be successful over the long haul. I find as I talk to executives, many of them have a core principle or a core value that they keep coming back to in these turbulent times that they're leading organizations. So if I were to ask you to share with our listeners, you know, what is the moral compass or the principle or belief that has helped guide you as you've been guiding the people that you lead in your organizations? I'm going to start with you, Tanya.
Oh, why did I know you were going to ask me that? Probably because we've known each other for a very long time. But I would tell you that that philosophy is grounded in what I call balance. And balancing yourself on a three-legged stool. That stool actually has three core principles, and that is the right element of focus to your family, the right element of focus to your career, and then the right element of focus to your faith. And I have found that if you can indeed find the equilibrium around those three legs on that stool, that you're usually able to be very, very successful. And if you maintain that sense of integrity around what is my responsibility to family, what is my responsibility to my career, and making sure my skills are relevant in what I'm being asked to do, and ensuring that spiritually you're grounded and recognize that we're all connected and have a responsibility to each other, you'll find yourself being able to grow both personally and professionally.
Great. Mike, you have a point of view?
It's tough to follow, Tanya. I knew it would be. I've always focused kind of on two things. I came out of business school believing everything could fit in a 2x2 matrix, and I believe you could take any topic and you could do that. But the first one is, you know, are you caring about, in an authentic way, results and culture? And I know those are overused words, but if you're authentic about your care for both of those, whether it's in your business or a nonprofit board you're a part of, that you're genuinely focused on results and culture. I've always found that to help me. And then when I'm coaching people and or trying to coach myself, you know, I ask everyone, are you good at what you do and do you like what you do in phases of your life? And, you know, most people say, yeah, I'm good at it. But when you really push, some people have just ended up doing whatever they're doing. And maybe they don't really like it. It doesn't feed their soul. Or maybe it's something that they really, really like, but they're not all that good at it. You got to hope that's a hobby, not you know, where you're making your living. But I've always used that model as a way to try to make the twist and turn decisions you make in your career. Is this something that's core and that you're good at and that feeds your soul? And if it is, you'll find a way to thrive. And if you thrive, you'll make the money you hope to make or enjoy the success you hope to enjoy.
Yeah. Meredith.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely echo everything that's already been said, and I would say that my variation of that has been seeking to live with passion and purpose in everything that I do, and that can be professionally in terms of my own personal development with my family, raising children. And I would say that I'm successful maybe 20 to 30% of the time. And I think part of the lens on that is, do you view that as a failure because I don't do it, you know, 70 to 80% of the time? Or do you say, wow, that's great. 20 to 30% of the time, you're living with passion and purpose. That's pretty cool. And, you know, in my best days, I'm able to view it with that lens. And I think that brings me back to something that I've been thinking a lot about in raising young children and also seeing individuals in the workforce that struggle or that seem to succeed more than others. And there's this element of resilience that I think is a defining attribute of those that are able to push through challenges and be a part of dynamic enterprises like the ones we're talking about that are growing. And it's this notion that things are not always going to work out. Frequently they don't. And so what is your grounding? What is your ability to learn from that, to be resilient and move on? And again, I would say that maybe half the time I'm as resilient as I would like to do, and half the time I kind of curl up in the fetal position for a little while and lick my wounds. So, I mean, it's having that awareness that that is something that is going to help you grow and allow you then to hopefully support your organization. So I don't know if that's so much a moral compass as those are kind of lessons learned over the past 20 to 25 years.
Yeah, you speak about lessons learned and kind of this whole moral compass. And one of the things that in my career early when I was being challenged, you know, you grow up, you're with your parents, you get to be a teenager or someone in your 20s, and you think they have no knowledge, right? You think you know everything. And one of the things my mother shared with me during a difficult time is, you know your non-negotiables. Because if you do that, then you will really focus on putting your energy on those things that for you are non-negotiable. I've got to figure out a way to make sure that they are a part of whatever situation I'm in. But on the flip side, it also helps you be able to say, you know, that other stuff is small stuff. Let's not let pride or these other things get in the way so that they get bigger than they are. So, you know, that's one of the things that for me is a moral compass. And, you know, we're talking about growth, we're talking about data, we're talking about technology, all those good things. And yet we know that sort of this moral compass and leadership of people is what really is a key differentiator for companies that grow and succeed over the long haul. And those that are just a flash in the pan. And so kind of piggybacking on this advice of my mother of knowing your non-negotiable, are there a few non-negotiables that you think about as you're developing the culture and people within your organizations that just fundamentally have to be there if you are going to be successful in sustained growth?
I would tell you, Michelle, that there are two non-negotiables from my perspective, and that is that as a leader, you must operate with integrity. If you compromise your principles and value system in doing business or any interaction with clients, you are not going to grow or be successful and sustain that success. I also believe that you have to ensure that you are valuing diverse thinking within the organization. If you are going to leverage the talent that you have on every dimension, valuing that people will think about scenarios different, valuing that people have different talent and skills that they can contribute to the same vision of the organization are things that you cannot negotiate on.
Great.
When I think about it, you often end up in conversations with people that are making that leap from individual contributor to manager or frontline manager or leader. And the conversation is, for me, is always, maybe it's not quite the same as a non-negotiable, but I talk a lot about helping them to understand that their role is changing. And I know that sounds easy to say, but I say, so let's talk about a few things. Literally, your calendar is going to go from 90% you doing stuff to 50% is one-on-one meetings, team meetings, and attending meetings. Your job's going to become listening to other people and giving a perspective, not you giving a perspective and voicing your opinion. Your job's going to become listening to the issues people have and helping them negotiate those. Are those things that are you're good at and that you like doing? And it's funny, you'll get some puzzled looks from somebody who's about to make that change. Now, I like what I do now. Well, then, choosing to lead people and manage is a choice. It's a calling. It's something that's got to be part of who you are and that you genuinely enjoy. So one of the things, it's probably not quite as clear as Tanya's non-negotiable, is really helping people understand that choice you're making if you want to be in a leadership role at a company.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so I love the thought of a non-negotiable but I can't say that I've really thought about that in the context. So I'm going to take that away from our discussion today. One of the things, though, listening to everyone speak that I thought to was the importance that I have found over the years in having members of my team that will tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. And so I think that in terms of something that for me is critical, and I would want in any organization that I'm a part of, be it a nonprofit or a for-profit, is really having those anchors, if you will, of individuals that may report to you or may be your board or may just be your colleagues, that, again, at the end of the day, even if they know that you really want to go in a certain direction, if they're not there with you, that they're going to point out the challenges, and that fundamentally there's an understanding that you're going to have to make a decision and move forward, and you're going to move forward together. But that's been a really important part of the decision-making at MedShare. And I'm so grateful for the team that we have that, again, even though I don't like it sometimes, when I'm headed on a certain path, especially around some of our growth decisions, I have a team that's going to say, okay, but here are the consequences of this, or have you thought about this aspect of it? And I think sometimes when you get into a senior level, people stop doing that. And that can be really problematic for you as an individual and for the organization's success.
Yeah, so I'm getting from all of you that you're pretty passionate about the organizations that you're a part of and that you lead and the work that you're doing. And as you think about the role that you have today, what's most exciting for you in that role? And then give me the flip side of, what's your challenge? What is the personal development piece that you're doing so that you can be a better leader? If I were to talk to you, 18 months from now, Mike, what's it for you?
I always tell people that I'm not casual about the things I do, and I don't suspect any of us would be at this table if we weren't. I'm very, very passionate about work. I'm passionate about health. I'm passionate about my family. I, run 2 half marathons a year just to keep a sharp edge, and running has helped me in the business world. Mm. Some long runs go great. There's a lot of them, to Meredith's point, that don't. And at some point in a long run, you just you say, well, if I keep moving, I will get to the end of it. And so back to business. For me, the fun is, I honestly have never worked harder nor had more fun in my 6.5 years at 22 Squared. It's a passionate, fun place. It's an industry that's changing right in front of us every day. I mean, we did not have a social media department 3.5, 4 years ago, and now we have a 15-person team. We did not have an analytics performance solutions team 3 years ago. Now we have a full team lodged against several of our clients. There are things we're doing that we have literally learned about, thought about, planned for, and put in place, and now are performing parts of the business that I'm personally involved in, and it makes my hair hurt. I'm learning every day, and it's a lot of fun. So for me, that's what I'm enjoying about this part of my career.
Meredith?
So I am just very excited and slightly scared by the next 5 years at MedShare. In a few hours, I'm headed to a board meeting where we'll be reviewing our strategic plan that's really the roadmap for the next 5 years for our organization. And it is a really exciting trajectory that we've set out for ourselves in terms of really expanding our reach within the U.S. around the Southeast, the Western region based out of California, and the Northeast based out of New York, New Jersey. And all because of the stories that we get from Haiti, from Zimbabwe, from the doctors and nurses that say, I was able to save this child's life because of this incubator that you provided us that Northside generously contributed. Those types of specific transactions that happen that are making a difference, providing hope and healing to people across the world. So that is something to be really excited when you get up each morning. And the flip side of that is that the responsibility of figuring out how to do that in a way as a nonprofit that's raising monies philanthropically and trying to do that in a responsible way to pay our bills and grow in a sustainable way, not just from an environmental aspect, but from a financial perspective, is a huge responsibility. And so it's, you know, again, glass half full, glass half empty. It's extremely exciting and challenging, and I couldn't ask for a better team and board to be on that path with. And at the same time, as someone that doesn't like to have the big failures, you know, we're setting ourselves out there with some risk that we might not be able to do this. And so, you know, it's what I call a joyful challenge, and we've got a lot of those ahead of us at MedShare.
What do I like most about being at Equifax? I dare say that it is because it is a forever evolving and changing environment, and particularly one that I don't have a history in per se. Dealing with financial services solutions, if you will, is not what I would probably tell you is my core competence. My core competence is marketing and sales. So what I believe the environment did for me was to cause me to be more creative about transferring my sales and marketing skills to a completely different industry. I think when you have change, when you have flexibility, when you can innovate and be creative about how you apply your talents, you can be a tremendous, valuable piece of talent for an organization. And Equifax has given me that environment to work in with those kinds of attributes. And I am thrilled to be there, and I plan to be there for a while.
Great. So as we begin to wind down our conversation, I've been getting quite a bit, and it's always nice when you know people and then you're also able to hear a little bit more about their stories. And you've talked about a lot of things that are, you know, very positive about growth and being in these phenomenal organizations. But we also know that there are challenges. And so maybe share with our listeners a little bit about, you know, a key lessons learned that you have, because sometimes we grow more from a challenge than participating in some kind of opportunity. And so I don't know if all of you have, you know, just a quick little story you can share about that. Meredith, I'm going to
Sure. I mean, first, one of the things that comes to mind for MedShare is the degree to which we set our goals for the organization and metrics that we motivate ourselves around in terms of the number of 40-foot ocean containers we will send out, the number of patients that we will impact, the number of hospitals that we will collect surplus from. And setting goals that stretch us to reach and that represent our growth trajectory, but also have a grounding in reality so that our staff doesn't get demoralized. An interesting thing that we've experienced this past fiscal year is that we did grow as an organization. We did more. We've touched more lives. We kept more surplus out of the landfill, but we didn't meet the goals. And so the staff, the board, the organization is in an interesting conundrum of how do you interpret that? So we did more than we did the previous year. We grew, but we had set our sights on doing even more. And so was it a success or was it a failure? And how do you keep yourself motivated then in the coming years and don't build a culture where people say, well, we don't meet our goals anyway, so why should I strive for them? So that's an interesting thing that I'm continuing to work through, and I love to get input from others that have faced that. And Mike, I don't know if you guys have that happen at 22 Squared and how you balance that out from a morale perspective.
Yeah, you know, we're like any business. It's all about growth, and advertising is – on many levels, it's a simple business. It's professional services, so it's generating ideas out of great people that your clients will buy and pay more for. And so you can grow by expanding your offering with your current clients, and of course you grow by landing new clients. And so to your point, Meredith, we set some very, very aggressive financial goals, and we set high qualitative goals, you know, things we want to be doing for our clients. I mean, some of our relationships have been in place for 20-plus years, and there's a certain specialness to that and a certain reverence for the relationship that also goes into our goal setting. So we're not going to just do things just to grow our relationship with those long-standing clients. It has to be in a very, very sincere, authentic, quality kind of way. So what we find is a lot of the young talent who hasn't weathered many of the things that some of us have weathered at the table, you know, view every meeting as, well, did we win in that meeting or didn't we? And, you know, the truth is in advertising, you just don't win that often. And even some of your ideas that win, the client changes it quite a bit. And so creative people, you know, a good batting average is 2 or 3 out of 10. And that is a learning process. And so we try to involve everyone in lots of other things so that sense of not every meeting is going to be a win, not every idea is going to win, but it was a worthy process, it was a worthy creative effort, a worthy creative endeavor. So we try to find the balance.
I think I'd sum it up in one word, and that is numerous scenarios that I've experienced throughout my career that I would probably tell you is healthy discontent. I have been fortunate enough to work with three world-class organizations that at some point were growing tremendously. At times, they were not growing. And I would say always, you will be provided, if you will, leadership that says we could have grown more. There are extraordinary possibilities in our level of growth. And I think if you find your total business or if you find a segment of your business at a stage when you're not growing or not growing as much as you should grow, then you have to be very honest and take a look in the mirror. And inside that mirror, you begin with yourself, and what is it that I could be doing differently to contribute in a way that will allow me to grow? But then you have to peel back the onion because it's not just about you. And if you can do those things, then you can begin to execute a plan. And that plan is available to you after you've asked yourself, where have I been? Where am I now? And where do I want to be? And then in most businesses, irrespective of the size of the business, I think you have to do diligence to what I call a financial autopsy. And that's to understand, what are your opportunity areas? Do you need to make more revenue? Do you need more customers? Or do you need to gain more from the customers that you have? Do you need to alter your pricing strategies? Do you need to reduce your expenses? Do you have enough capital to invest in your infrastructure? I think after you do the financial autopsy, it will signal where you need to invest. And I would dare say also that it's very important to validate yourself in terms of, are you still relevant with what you are offering in your products or your services? Have you really taken advantage of the insights in the trends in the use of technology and understanding your competition? You know, too often we are looking inside and not looking at others who compete against us. But you can actually learn how to differentiate yourself by truly understanding your customer and understanding what your competition is doing for your customer. I think when you get all of those components together, it'll lead you down the right path. And it is then that you can garner and harness the great talent and the leadership that you have in your organization to execute against a winning plan.
Great. Well, it's Friday morning. You're getting ready to live for the weekend. Anything exciting going on for you all in the weekend?
Taking my 18-year-old daughter to college tomorrow, so it's a big milestone event for the family and certainly for her.
Great.
So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Okay. On the weekends, I get to transition to a joyful job that I enjoy, which is that of soccer mom. So my 11- and 9-year-old sons have a soccer tournament. So I think we have maybe 7 or 8 soccer games this weekend. So we're hoping the rain will wind down. But looking forward to that. That'll be a great way to just unplug and be a mom for a little bit this weekend.
Okay.
And I get to clean my house and play auntie duty.
Okay. All of those are good things. I've got a brunch that's going on. So my last question before we sign off for our show today, and I'm going to piggyback on something you just said, that you're taking your daughter to college. And anybody that knows me knows that I went to Spelman College here in Atlanta. That's how I got to this great city. And every year when the freshmen come in, they bring the alumna back to talk with them. So I was with a group of freshmen this past Sunday, and that's always great to have their energy. So my parting question to each of you is, you know, think back to your younger self. In college, in your 20s, you were just starting your career. And if you could, you know, we all know 2020 is hindsight. If you could give sort of some parting words of advice, what would you tell your younger self in terms of what it takes to be a leader that really can consistently grow their organizations and their people? What would you tell your younger self?
I know for me, and I think this is a trait that perhaps we all share at the table, but for sure something Meredith said is a trait I share with her, is a fear of the big failures. And, you know, the reality is you're going to have a few. And I don't know that a 25-year-old can hear it anyway, honestly. I mean, I have a 25-year-old son and an 18-year-old daughter and 16-year-old, and I don't know if I would have heard it then. But it would have been something around, you're going to make a few mistakes. You're going to have some hard moments, and you will find a way through it. And had I had a better grounding on that then, I think a few of the bumps in my life would have been not as bumpy.
Yeah, I think that if I were to go back to my younger self, I would have a couple things to say. And one of them would be, take the big chances early. You know, do things that are slightly off the grid before you settle down, have a family, have, you know, whatever you choose to do later in life. And it doesn't mean that you can't do those things later, but the dynamics change. And so embrace that time early on and don't be in such a rush to get to the destination in your 20s or even in your 30s. Life expectancy is so long now. We have so much time to live and experience and grow and do different things. And I just think embracing every chapter and getting the most out of it is really important. So that would be one thing that I would suggest to myself. And I think probably an element of that is just breathe. Just breathe and pace yourself because there's a long, fun road ahead. And that intensity and urgency can help you in some ways, but it can also burn you out. And I worry about some of the people that I work with. I worry about my own children, that they're going to burn out by age 15 because of the intensity of everything that's going on around them. So I think just breathe and enjoy it and take some risks. And there'll be plenty of time to be kind of settled and make the safe choices later on.
Tanya?
You know, that's the hardest question that you've asked me today. If I were talking to a Spelman freshman, I'd likely tell them several things. The first one would be, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I think with students at that age, they have a vision and they have aspirations about their professional careers. And they believe they can accomplish and do everything, and they know everything, typically when they come out of school. But there's something to be said about collaboration and being able to influence in a way that people want to collaborate with you and aid you in fulfilling your dreams and destination. So I would tell them, be aware of how and in the manner that you collaborate with people. Just because you may be financially able to do something doesn't always mean that you should. And when you're leading others, do that with a sense of integrity and grace. And I, with things like I could probably tell them on the radio, that's probably what I would share.
Well, great. Well, you all have been just a delightful ungroup to have on my first show. Growth Matters comes to you every Friday at 10 o'clock. And so we hope that you took a nugget away from the discussion we had today. I know I did. And so, remember, Friday's at 10. Let's talk about it because
growth matters.